All right, we're beginning here five lines down on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav. V'Amri Lo, Amar Rabba Ben Isi, Amar Rav. So here we have a statement from Rav. It's questionable as to which Amora brought the statement in the name of Rav. Rabbi Meir, V'Rabbi Yossi, V'Rabbi Yoshua, V'Rabbi Elazar, V'Rabbi Eliezer, Kulu Svirlo. They all hold, Dein Sheni Ose Shlishi B'Chulin. A Sheni cannot make a Shlishi in Chulin. In other words, they disagree with Rabbi Akiva's position in the Mishnah, and they are supportive of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, not surprisingly, since many of them are Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Therefore, they believe you can't get from a Sheni to a Shlishi b'Chulin. Tosfot Shanz brings here a very, very interesting Rav Haigon. He says over here, Yesh Mish Omer B'Shema Rav Haigon Zal, T'cho Heicha De'ika Ploni U Ploni U Ploni Kulu Svir Lehu. Anytime the Gemara brings this type of language, which is, you have numerous Tanaim with the same Shita, and they go, so and so and so and so and so and so, all believe the same thing. Dein Halocha Kemotan, T'kulu Shita Achat Amur, Rabbanan Didu Pligi Alayu. So that the reason they do this is to categorize all of those individuals together and basically say that the halacha is not like this grouping of individuals. So that's the mesora that they have from Rav Haigon. Anytime the Gemara does this, then that's what it means. It means that the Gemara is basically isolating these shitot, saying these individuals all hold like this, and the halacha is not this way. Only problem is, ve'ashta kasha mi'ocho. Over here, it seems very problematic. De'kaimelan de'in sheni oseh shlishi b'chulin. So that's basically the Psak Halacha. The Psak Halacha is that a Sheni does not make a Shlishi in Chulin. V'chein posek Rav Chanan miYerushalayim. V'lam go Ashkechan Rabbona depligi aleilu Tanaim. And we don't find opposite opinion or contradicting opinion here. The only person who disagrees is Rabbi Akiva. Otherwise, we don't find people who disagree with this position. Da Rabbona de Rabbi Meir Modi de'ein beto segimo. Sheperish akunjish. Vigam al Rabbi Yeshua, lekaman de poligale, and Rabbi Yeshua in our Mishnah, nobody argues on him. And we have other instances or proofs to the fact that this is the halacha, and this is the way that we paskin. So this would undermine this shitor, this principle of Rav Haigon. That's why he's bringing it over here, because it doesn't seem to work. So, of course, you could say, ain't some chim al klalot, a general principle about general principles, they don't always work. They work majority of the time. They work in most instances. Sometimes they're not applicable. And here, that would be one of the cases where it's not applicable. The other possibility is that there are exceptions to the rule and questioning how the rule works, but sometimes these principles only work when there's other factors that support or indicate that that's the case. So for instance, if the Stama did the Gemara is against this position, then that's what they're doing. When they bring them all together, these chachamim, and say they all have one shita, the Gemara is saying that we disagree with it, or this is not the right way. Over here, where there's no evidence to the contrary, then we would paskin this way. We won't say that it's dismissing that opinion. The other possibility is here, the Gemara is attempting to do something else, which is to show that Rabbi Akiva is wrong. Rabbi Akiva has this unusual opinion, this drasha, that nobody else holds up, and that's what the Gemara is trying to prove here. That no one else holds like Rabbi Akiva, and therefore the halacha should not be like Rabbi Akiva. Still others suggest that the only time that this list works is when the list is comprehensive. When it covers all those individuals that have this position. When someone's left out, if we leave out people from the list, then it's not considered to be what Rav Haigon says, that it's a list saying that the halacha is not this way. In this instance, we know they left out Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. From Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah, we know that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai doesn't have this opinion, and he's not mentioned in this list, although again, many of his Talmidim are mentioned here, so I don't know if you really have to mention him, because all of his Talmidim seem to have the same Shita, which is in Beit Oseh Gimel. Anyway, it's just very interesting that the Tosfot Shanz mentions this Rav Haigon, and yet over here, this happens to be one of the cases where it is an exception to the rule. And as the Tosfot Shanz points out, that here, there's no evidence that some people disagree with this position. And therefore, maybe the rule of Rav Haigon is not applicable in this case. So now the Gemara is going to go through each of these positions to show us that that's the case. Rabbi Meir, Tetzanan, we have a Mishnah, that kol haton biatmayim midivrei sofrim. Anything that requires going to the mikveh midivrei sofrim means midirabanan. mitamei et hakodesh upusel et hatruma. Remember the terminologies that we discussed yesterday. Mitamei means the item is tamei and can convey tuma forward. Pusel means it's the end of the line. So any case where the chachamim instituted tuma, then they deem that item to be a sheni l'tuma. That sheni l'tuma in kodesh is mitamei. Because in Kodesh, you can go to a fourth level Tuma'ah. That means that the Sheni makes a Shlishi. That Shlishi will make a Revi'i. In Truma, the end of the line is the third level of Tuma'ah. That means the Sheni will make a Shlishi and there'll be Pusel b'Truma'ah. That's the end of the line because it's Pasul. On the other hand, Umutar b'Chulin. It doesn't impact Chulin. So now, what's interesting here is that the Gemara brings a Mishnah that's talking about Tuma'ah d'Rabbanan. So now when you have Tuma d'Rabbanan, how can you prove from Tuma d'Rabbanan anything about the Shita? You're right. In Tuma d'Rabbanan, we're saying that a Sheni doesn't make a Shlishi. Who says Rabbi Akiva doesn't agree with that? It seems that even Rabbi Akiva might agree in Tinei d'Rabbanan. So you have to suggest one of two things. Either the proof is from the next piece of the Mishnah, or you have to say that generally, and this is a principle in Tinei d'Rabbanan, that Dinei d'Rabbanan have to be parallel or designed after a paradigm d'Oraita. And that means that once there's an existing paradigm, the Chachamim don't come and reinvent the wheel when they want to institute things that are d'Rabbanan. What they do is they say we take the paradigm d'Oraita and then we apply it at the level d'Rabbanan. So if we already have a paradigm in d'Oraita that Sheni doesn't make a Shlishi in Chulin, but it does affect Truman Kodesh, then the Chachamim, when they instituted their Tuma, they patterned it after the paradigm d'Oraita. So you're right, Eino Nochanami here, it's only the Rabbanan, but it's paralleling the Din d'Oraita, and therefore could show you something about the Din d'Oraita. That's one possible way to explain the proof. Or, the other part of the proof possibly is, Uma'aser divei Rabbi Meir. That according to Rabbi Meir, a Sheni does not make a Shlishi, even in Ma'aser. So here, the proof might be from Rabbi Meir's Shita itself, that this has application by Maaser. The Chachamim Osrim b'Maaser. The Chachamim say that it does affect Maaser. When you have Tuma d'Rabbanan, it's a Sheni, it does affect the Maaser. The Meir says it does not affect the Maaser. That might be the proof. The fact that the Maaser is restricted by the Chachamim and not by Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir shows you that he doesn't think even Midoraita Sheni Osha Shlishi, because if there was conceptually a Sheni Osha Shlishi b'Chulin d'Oraita, then certainly by Maaser, he would have said that there's a problem. The fact that he says there's no problem by Maaser shows you that there is no paradigm d'Oraita that is Sheni Osei Shlishi, otherwise he should have been Choshesh for it. Even the Chachamim, who Oser by Maaser, as Rashi points over here, is Bachila. That you only have to eat it. Aval b'negiya shari, v'chulin af le'achol. According to the Chachamim, you can't eat it, but you could touch it. Because Maaser in general is like Chulin. It doesn't have any special status. The only requirement by Maaser is that possibly Maaser Sheni is eaten besimcha. It has been in happiness, and that's why lo achalti be'oni mimenu. You can't eat it when you're an onay. Truma doesn't have that requirement of being eaten besimcha. Maaser Sheni does, and that's why it's lo achalti be'oni mimenu. But here, as Rashi points out, it's just a chumra de Rabbanan that you can't eat it when you're a Sheni de Tuma. As Rashi points out, the Gemara here says, this is a Shita Rabbi Meir. It's not only Shita Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim agree also. Their names are not mentioned. Rabbi Meir umachlukuto kamar. The Gemara says Rabbi Meir holds like this. Doesn't mean just Rabbi Meir holds this way. It means Rabbi Meir and everybody who is involved in the machluka, they're also hold like Rabbi Meir. The alternative to Rashi's explanation is what we said now, which is that the proof might be from Maaser. Because otherwise, the Mishnah is only talking about something that's a derabbanon level. And since it's a derabbanon level, maybe the Gemara wants to bring the proof from Maaser, and that's why they mention Rabbi Meir's name instead of the Chachamim, who don't agree by Maaser. Right? Rabbi Yossi Hadamran. Rabbi Yossi, we already know from yesterday's daf, because if Rabbi Yossi really believes that a sheni ose shlishi, dim ita laiti revi b'truma b'chamishi b'kodesh. Because the same vehicles that we use for the Kal V'Chomers before, that say that the Kal V'Chomer says that you get the next level in Truma, and the Kal V'Chomer by Kodesh gets the next level in Kodesh, those Kal V'Chomers, if you started from a lower base, which means if Chulin starts at Sheni and then goes to Shlishi, that means that Chulin is a Shlishi. That would be the starting point of the Kal V'Chomer. And then the Kal V'Chomer that you use by Truma, you would then say, well, that Kal V'chomer would bring me to a Revi. And the Kal V'chomer by Kodesh from Mechmuchusar Kippurim, that would bring you to a Chamishi B'Kodesh. The fact that Rabbi Yossi only has third level by Truma and fourth level by Kodesh shows you that his starting point is Sheini by Chulin. Had his starting point by Chulin been Shlishi, then everything would drop down a level. The fact that he doesn't shows you that that's not the case. Rabbi Yeshua Ditznan, Rabbi Yeshua's Shita we find from here. Velazer Omer Ochel Ochel Rishon Rishon. Sheni Sheni Shlishi Shlishi. So the Mishnah in Tarot tells us that an individual who consumes food that is a Rishon Tumah, they become a Rishon Tumah Midr Rabbanan. You consume a Sheni Tumah, become a Sheni Tumah Midr Rabbanan. Shlishi, you become a Shlishi. Rabbi Yeshua Omer. Ochel Ochel Rishon V'Ochel Sheni. Doesn't matter whether you eat something that is a Rishon L'Tumah or a Sheni L'Tumah. Sheni, you become a Sheni L'Tumah. Shlishi, if you eat something that is a Shlishi L'Tumah, Sheni B'Kodesh. V'Ein Sheni B'Trumah. Becomes a Sheni in Kodesh, and in Trumah it has no effect. What is the rule? This rule is only applicable. B'Chulin, Shenaseh Al Tarat Trumah. Same about Chulin that are kept at the levels of Tarav Trumah. Al Tarat Trumah in. That's true by items that are kept al tarat truma, al tarat kodesh lo. Now that's the girsa that we have in our Gemara. Rashi, the Tosfot Shantz, others bring over here that there was an alternate girsa in the Gemara which they favored, and that the girsa should have been al tarat truma in chulin greida lo. That on the chulin al tarat truma, yes, that was the case. By chulin, that is not the case. Alma kasaver ein sheni osir shlishi bechulin. That you see here, that he doesn't have a sheni making into a shlishi by chulin. So now the way that the girsa is, according to Rashi, the Tosfot Shantz, the girsa that they favor, that's because in order to come up with a scenario in which he can get a sheni to a shlishi, then he said it has to be a case where you're doing chulin al tarata truma. So that's the only way you could come up with a scenario like this. Had it been that chulin also went from sheni to shlishi, he wouldn't have to look to chulin shenaseh al tarat truma to get to that solution to find a sheni making a shlishi. The fact that he does that shows you that by chulin, that's not the case. And what Rashi explains, and Tosfot Shantz reiterates, is that according to our girsa, which says that this is true by chulin shenaseh al tarat truma, so then our girsa says al tarat truma in, al tarat kodesh lo, it means that chulin shenaseh al tarat kodesh doesn't exist. That category doesn't exist, and it's as if it's chulin, because b'teilei dato etzel kol adam. Nobody keeps chulin al tarat kodesh, and since nobody keeps chulin al tarat kodesh, if he says he's doing it, we ignore it, and it's as if the item is chulin. So that's the equivalent of what we're saying now, that it's chulin, and chulin is not used as the item here to get from a sheni to a shlishi. So Rabbi Yeshua's position is that a person who eats a rishon and sheni, then he becomes a sheni de tuma, because the principle that he invokes here is shena ochel chamur kemachal, that the one who's eating is not as stringent as the machal, the item that he eats itself. Of a machal sheni osel to sheni, but if he eats something that's a second level tuma, he becomes a sheni. Because we find such a principle by liquids. Liquids have a special din. And so a sheni can make a sheni by liquid, so we have a paradigm like that, where a sheni can make a sheni. So a rishon, when you eat it, makes you into a sheni, which is the normal way that tumah works, it drops the level. Sheni osa sheni, because we have a paradigm in other places that it can make it. Now shlishi is a sheni in kodesh. The third level will become sheni, goes ochel shlishi. Person eats something that's a third level of tumah, his guf becomes a sheni in kodesh. So that if he touches kodesh now, he will make it into a shlishi. And that shlishi can make a rivi'i. Of course, all of these tumot are all dinim dirabanan. And then the Mishnah qualifies this and says, this is all b'chulin shenasu atarat truma. If you eat shlishi b'tuma, which only exists, which is what he says now, be'ezeh chulim amru shau ochel shlishi shalein naseh sheni l'kodesh. Which chulin has a shlishi that can make you into a sheni for kodesh? Where do you have such a chulin? Chulin doesn't reach the third level of tuma. The answer is b'chulin shenasau al tarat truma. People kept in their day, if they were like kohanim and they ate truma all the time, in order to preserve the tarat truma in their house, not only did they eat truma al tarat truma, They ate all their chulin, they kept the same rules of truma. So this individual is keeping chulin al tarata truma. So the chulin that he's eating here, when it's a rishon and a sheni, it's regular chulin, you could be, it's not a problem. How do you ever get a shlishi in chulin? He says, you know what, the case of shlishi b'chulin is a case where he's keeping chulin al tarata truma. He's treating his chulin like truma. And that's how he gets to a third level of tuma. Otherwise, what the conclusion is there's no shlishi l'tuma in chulin. Otherwise, just simply explain that chulin, a shlishi of chulin is what he ate. That's not what he did. He ate a shlishi of chulin, but the chulin there is defined as chulin shenasu al tarat t'chuma. So then the deal in our Gemara is that's only true by chulin shenasu al tarat t'chuma, not al tarat kodesh, because nobody keeps their chulin like kodesh. And therefore, if he does it, we ignore him, and it's like regular chulin. If it's regular chulin, it doesn't reach the shlishi. Or the Girsa of Rashi and others is that it's true by chulin shenasu al tarat t'chuma, but it's not true by regular chulin. By regular chulin, you can't get down to a shlishi le tuma. And that's what the proof is for Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua holds that there is no such thing as a shlishi in chulin. Otherwise, he could have simply explained the case in the Mishnah as a case where it was a chulin that was a shlishi le tuma. The fact that he says, no, it's a case of chulin shenasu al tarat t'chuma, that's chulin that is mimicking the levels of truma, shows you that's only true in that case, not true in the case of regular chulin. And now we have a proof that Rabbi Yeshua believes that there is no such thing as a shlishi by chulin. So Alma Kasavra in Shini Yosei Shlishi b'chulin. Toswot here, like in many places in Shas, tries to reconcile between the Mishnah that we're quoting from Tarot and the Gemara in the beginning of Shabbat, the Yud Chet Davar, that Nigzeru, which seems to indicate that the Gzerot over there are similar to what's found in the Mishnah. And how do we reconcile between those two items? So Tosfot here and many other places says that there were actually stages of the Gzerot, and that there was a very, what he calls a Gzerak Tuma, and then there was a later Gzerah, which is the Yud Chet Davar. The Mishnah here is recording an early Gzerah. That what's found in the Yud Chet Davar that looks identical to this adds components or dimensions to that Gzerah that tightens up the Gzerah. And so Tosfot says that there were at least two, and some places he says three gzerot that built on top of each other that created the final gzerot, and that the list of Yud Chet Davar in the Gemara and Shabbat is not synonymous or the same as that which is found in the Mishnah, but rather one is a gzerak tuma, which is in the Mishnah, and there's a later gzerah, which is mentioned in the Yud Chet Davar in Shabbat, and in other places he mentions one other gzerah that is similar, that would make it actually that there were three different gzerot over here. The fourth example is the case of Rabbi Elazar. Tanya Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Shloshtan Shavin. All three of them are equal. Harishon Shebekodesh, Shebechulin, Ushebetruma. When you have a Rishon in Kodesh, Chulin, or Truma, Mitamei shnayim uposel achad bekodesh, mitamei achad uposel achad betruma, uposel achad bechulin. So it's very straightforward here. He says that if you have a rishon l'tuma, a rishon l'tuma has application by chulin, kodesh, and truma. It applies in all those cases. But what is the result of that? So we'll work backwards. In chulin, he says it's posel achad. It makes one item pasul. Pasul means you're at the end of the line. That means a rishon makes a sheni l'tuma in chulin, and then you're done. It's over. So that's the proof that we're looking for. In Truma, it makes Tamei, and then Posel. Tamei is because the Sheni can make a Shlishi, so it makes one item Tamei, which is the Rishon makes the Sheni Tamei, and then the Sheni makes the Shlishi Pasul. And that's what he says by Truma, that you have Tamei Echad, Uposel Echad. You have a Sheni and then a Shlishi, the Tuma. The Sheni can convey Tuma, the Shlishi is the end of the line. By Kodesh, we know it goes down to Revi'i, which means that it's Mitamei, the sheni is mitamei, the shlishi, and the revi'i is pasul. So that's what he says here, that it is mitamei shnayim. It causes tuma for two, uposel achad, and it's posel one, meaning that it makes the sheni and shlishi the tuma, and the pasul is the revi'i in kodesh. So again, all of that is to teach us really the last line that he brings, which is that by chulin, he says that a rishon l'tuma only makes a sheni the tuma. It's pasul. After you hit sheni the tuma, there's no tuma beyond that. So again, here we see Rabbi Elazar believes that there is sheni eno se shlishi bechulin. Now the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, it's not of a Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, chala nitelet min haTorah al haTmeah. The chala can be taken off of something that is tamayim, but sake, you have dough that is tamay. That dough that is tamay, you could take off your challah from other dough that is Torah, that's also tevel, the challah, that has yet to have its challah removed from it. What exactly the scenario is not clear here. Rashi says that it's a case where it was tmeyah b'mezid. It's a case where it happened intentionally. The woman or the person who's working with the dough intentionally got it tamei. So now he's causing a loss to the kohen. Because if he's mafrish challah from a batzek that is tamei, then the challah or chumat tmeyah, the kohen can't utilize. He can't eat it. And since he can't eat it, you're causing a loss to the kohen. So the penalty for the individual who does that, makes the batzek tamei intentionally, is that they have to now bring in a challah tehora or batzek tahor and be mafrish from the tahor al ha tamei. On the other hand, in cases where it was an accident, that's what Rashi says over here, achi shur challah achad mechavdal ma'isata shogeget onasa, if it happened by accident or she was anusa, then we only take off 1/48. It's made by mezid. If you make it tamei intentionally, achad mechavdalad, it's 1/24. Shalei chotei niskar. So that the sinner doesn't benefit. So this has to do with the fact that challah is truma. It's similar to truma. Just like truma has no shi'ur min haTorah, challah has no shi'ur min haTorah. The Chachamim established that for home-baked goods or batzek that is used in the home, you take off 1/24 for challah. For commercial size quantities, you take off 1/48. So those are the two shiurim that we find by challah, 1/24 and 1/48. So what the Chachamim say is that in cases where the challah is going to go to the kohen, then you take off 1/24. Cases where the challah is not going to be useful because it can't be eaten by the kohen because it's tamei, then you only take off 1/48 because it's going to go to waste anyway. So why take off more instead of less? So there, you take off 1/48. That's only true, as Rashi points out, if it would happen accidentally. If the person intentionally made it tamei, so then he only has to give 1/48 instead of 1/24, we penalize him and say he has to take off the 1/24. Rashi says the same thing over here. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Heicha did it make mezida, talo shecher betarai. If you made it tamei intentionally, not only do you have to take off 1/24, you have to do it from something that is tahor. Others disagree with Rashi's position over here and say that this applies no matter what. Rabbi Lezer is suggesting, if you have the opportunity to take it off betarah, why not take it off betarah rather than betumah? So it doesn't have to be in a case where it's done intentionally, and this is a penalty, but rather this is the best scenario. If you could take it off betarah, we ask you to do it, and here is the way to do it. And that's what Rabbi Lezer is going to explain to us. Today, where we're mafrish challah, and all challah goes the ibud, gets wasted anyway, the same way that when we're mafrish chumah today, all the chumah goes basically the ibud, it cannot be used, it's not eaten by the kohanim today, we're mafrish amashu, we were mafrish the smallest amount for chumah, the same thing by challah, we take off a small piece and we burn it, the piece that we take off is, again, not of the 1/24th, 1/48th side, because it's all going to the ibud, going to waste. So there's no reason to take off in these large quantities when it's not really going to the kohen anyway. So we're mafrish to be mikayim, the din of challah, or mikayim the din of truma, most likely midrabanan, but because we want to be mikayim it, we do it in the minimum way so that we don't waste. There's no reason to waste. All right, so now, Zanan. Rabbi Lezer Omer, challah nitel min haTorah l'tameyah. Keitzad, how do you do this? Shtei yisot. You have two doughs here, two bowls of dough. Achat Torah v'chat tameyah. One of them is tamei, that's the problem here, and one of them is tehorah. Now, the one that is tehorah also requires challah to be removed from it, because otherwise it wouldn't work. You have to have both of them be required here to have challah be removed from them. Notel kedei challah misa shelo horma challata. You take off a piece of the challah from the one that has yet to have challah removed from it, from a dough that is tehor, that has yet to be removed from it. Notein pachot mi kebeitza be'emtza. You place less than a kabeitza between the two balls of dough. Kedei litol min hamukaf. Can you take off from min hamukaf? Min hamukaf is a din that we find by trumot masrot. It's something here that chala as well, which is that when you're mafrish trumot masrot, you have to do it from something that is proximate. That you have to take off when you take off the trumot, the item that is tevel has to be right there, and you take off min hamukaf is something right in front of you, right next to you. You don't take off chumah from something that's across the room, something that's somewhere else. It works, b'diavad, but we try not to do it. So how do here I get it to be mina mukaf? Now, it's interesting here, from this Gemara, that those want to prove that mina mukaf means literally touching. They have to be together, because that's the prescription here by Rabbi Eliezer, that they actually have to physically be touching. That has to be physically proximate. Others argue, I think the Maharam Rotenberg has a tshuva about this, that it's not true. You can't prove from here that they have to be physically touching. In our case, you need them to be physically touching to overcome the problem. There's a problem here, which is that you have one dough that is tohor, one dough that is tameh. You might have thought that they are two different minim. They're actually two separate entities. And if you keep them apart, you actually make them look even more like two separate entities. So in this case, we force you to physically make contact between them in order to show that you're really making them into one item. So you don't necessarily have to prove from here that every time you need them physically touching, but rather it's only in cases where there would have been a reason to believe that the two items are separate. This is a way to bring them together and show you that they're one item. We obviously, in cases where it's impossible, we actually do it after the fact, or mafrish challah, and they're not touching, which is in the cases of matzah. When they bake the matzot, they only take the challah off after the fact. So what they do is they cover it, cover the matzot, to make them as if they're one, and then you mafrish the challah from the matzot after the fact. Over here, the reason you may not do that is over here, first of all, it's possible to do beforehand. Right, so why doesn't covering work over here? So that's what some of the Rishonim suggest, that it proves here that covering doesn't work, that it's not enough to cover it. Others, like the Maharam Buttenberg says, don't prove that from here. Here, the reason we're forcing you to do it is because you would have thought they're disparate objects. When everything's the same, like the matzot, then covering it is enough. When the items are different items, one's tamei, one's tohor, then covering may not be enough. You have to have them physically touching. So then is the problem. You cannot take from shtei minim. That's true in truma, and it's true in challah. It may not be as clear, because in truma, you can't take from oranges on grapefruits, because it has to be mimin, mimino. And so, you could argue the same thing in challah. The question is, how is min defined in challah? Is min defined as the five species that are chayavim in challah, are they all one category and one min? Because the chamesha dganim are all called dagan, and therefore it doesn't matter. Or is each species considered to be separate? So you'd have to ask in that case whether it's min bimino or not, based on how you view the different dganim. So now, you put it in the emsak, and they didn't tell me to mokwaf, in order to take off from them being proximate. Chamim osrim. The chamim say you cannot do this. Vitanya, kabeitza. So when it comes to a braita, it says you can do it with a kabeitza. Here in the Mishnah that we quoted, Rabbi Elazar says it has to be pachot mi kabeitza. Less than a kabeitza. We have a braita that says you even put a kabeitza in between. Savrua, now the Gemara is going to say, this is what they thought in the Beit Midrash. The Gemara is going to give a number of explanations. What Rashi claims here, the Savrua, is coming to explain the machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah. Why do they argue? What's their argument about? And now the Gemara is going to go through different options. It's about what their argument is. Other Rishonim suggest, here we quoted a Mishnah and a Braita. So, in the quote of the Mishnah in Challah, the Mefarshim there suggest that the explanation here is not an explanation of the machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer, but rather, it's an explanation of the two positions of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, and the Rabbi Eliezer of the Braita. And that's what the Gemara is coming to explain here. Why does he have an opinion in one case less than a kabeitza, and the other case he has a position of even a kabeitza? And that's what the Gemara is explaining over here. You can see in Rashi, Rashi says that it's explaining the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer's position, and then in each case, Rashi says, or explains why Rabbi Eliezer of the Braita is different than Rabbi Eliezer of the Mishnah. But that's not what the Gemara is after. So it's a question as to whether the explanation here is helping you understand the two positions of Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Now, the usage of the dough in between. As Rashi tells us over here, when it comes to the conveyance of Tumah, the conveyance of Tumah can only be done by Ochel that is the size of a kabeitza. So if you have something that's the size of a kabeitza, it can convey tumah forward. As far as accepting tumah, you can accept tumah even a kol shehu. Even the smallest amount accepts tumah. Tosafot, in other places in Shas, disagrees with Rashi, and says that the kabeitza is the size for accepting tumah and conveying tumah. Ochel will not accept tumah unless it's the size of kabeitza, and won't pass forward to convey tumah unless it's the size of kabeitza. The truth is, Many people quote that Rashi holds this way and the Tosfot holds this way. Rashi himself is inconsistent in Shas. I can show you in different places that Rashi sometimes says, like the Balei HaTosafot, that Ochel cannot be Mekabel Tumah unless it's the size of a Kebetza. Either way, the position of Rabbi Elazar in the Mishnah is then understood this way, which is that if you put a dough less than a Kebetza between the two items, the Tumah will not be conveyed forward. Which is that if you put a dough less than a Kebetza between the Tameh dough and the Tahor dough, then that piece that's less than a Kebetza is touching both of them. Well now, according to Rashi, it becomes Tameh, because even a Koshu can become Tameh. But since it's less than a Kebetza, it doesn't pass the Tumah forward to the Tahor side. According to the Balei HaTosafot, who say that even a Kebetza cannot, it has to be a Kebetza to accept Tumah, then that less than a Kebetza doesn't even accept the Tumah from the Tameh side to pass it forward. So that's the answer of why Rabbi Elazar says you put less than a Kebetza in between would likely be along these lines, as to prevent the crossing of the Tumah from the Tameh to the Tahor, so you create a bridge between them. That bridge serves to create a physical connection between the two items, but the bridge also prevents the Tumah from moving from the Tameh to the Tahor. That would be, in the abstract, what Rabbi Elazar is trying to do here, and the Chachamim disagree. So now the Gemara, we'll read according to Rashi, wants to explain what exactly is their machloket here. Savrua, they thought in the Beit Midrash, idiv idiv isa rishona. Everybody agrees here that the Tamei Isa is Tamei Berishon Letumah. V'chulin atvulim dechala lo kechala damu. Chulin that is waiting to have chala removed from it, basically tevel dechala, is not like chala. Doesn't have a din of chala. So my love, b'haka miflege. Based on those premises, this would be the machloka between them. You already know that the Gemara lays out hanachot, suggestions as to what their positions are. This is true. This is true, then those assumptions make it possible to have the next statement, which is, this is their machloket. The way to undermine that is to say that's wrong, and that the assumptions are incorrect. So the next series of machlokot will say, no, don't say it this way. Undermine those assumptions that you made before. So here, la'ilah b'hakam iflagay, d'mar savar, ain sheni yoseh shlishi b'chulin. Mar savar, sheni yoseh shlishi b'chulin. Simple machloket here, which is that you have a rishon l'tumah, which is the tamei chala. You have the dough in between. The dough in between becomes a sheni l'tumah. And that sheni l'tumah cannot make a shlishi l'tumah. That's according to Rabbi Eliezer. According to the Chachamim, know that even a sheni can make a shlishi l'tumah. That's why they don't allow you to do it. So that's now would explain even the Braita. Rabbi Eliezer's position, the Braita says that even a kebetza can be there. That's what the Rashi explains over here, that Rabbi Elazar would believe even the size of the Kebetza could be there. Based on this assumption, doesn't matter what the size of the middle piece is, because Sheni, no Shlishi. So the middle piece can be any size. So that explains why it's a Kebetza. Then why did Rabbi Elazar in the Mishnah say, do less than a Kebetza? So, Batana de Matnitin, Damar le Rabbi Elazar, Pachod mi Kebetza. The Mishnah says you should use less than a Kebetza. La Mishum de Ilay Sheni Oseh Shlishi. It's not because he believes that Sheni Oseh Shlishi, because Rabbi Elazar believes Sheni Ein Oseh Shlishi. As long as we can reduce the amount of Tumah here, we're going to do it. So we'll take extra precautions over here. We'll take extra guard to do it less than a Kebetza, just so because it's safer. But in the case here, it wouldn't matter, because it's a Sheni, and then the Shlishi would not happen, and you could use any size, according to Rabbi Eliezer. So that's the speculation of the Gemara, that's their machloket. Amar of Mari Breder of Kana, no. The Kuliyama ain't Sheni Oseh Shlishi B'chulin. No, it's Muskam Lakol. Both Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim believe no Sheni makes a Shlishi. V'halcha B'chulin Tvulim L'chalaka Miflegei. They're actually arguing in one of the assumptions we made before, one of the Hanochot we made before, which is that when you have something that contains within it Chala, which is, you have dough that has yet to have Chala taken off of it, which is Tvulin HaTvulim L'chala. Tvulin that needs Chala removed from it. What is the status of that item? Marsavar chachaludamu. The Chachamim believe it's like chala, which means that it could accept a shlishi l'tumah. Marsavar lav chachaludamu. Rabbi Elazar believes it is not like chala, which means that according to Rabbi Elazar, we're dealing with pure chulin here. Pure chulin, the first dough is a rishon l'tumah. The dough in the middle is a sheni l'tumah. It doesn't make a shlishi, so you don't have to worry about the tahor dough on the other side. Once again, you could even have a kebetz in the middle. Explains why the Braita, Rabbi Elazar, has no shiur. In the Mishnah, he says less than a kebetza, just to be on the safe side. The Chachamim believe that, yes, Ein Ochanami in Chulin, a Sheni doesn't make a Shlishi, but here we're not talking about Chulin. Here we're talking about Chulin that has Chala embedded in it. The Chala is yet to be removed from it. It gives that Chala, that Chulin that is Tevel the Chala, a status like Chala, which is Truma. In Truma, a Sheni does make a Shlishi, so that'd be the problem here. The first Chala is a Rishon, the middle Chala is a Sheni, the third Chala, which is Teorah, is going to be a Shlishi, because it's like Truma, it's going to be deemed like Truma, and you can make a Shlishi to Truma, and that's why they don't allow it. That's another way to explain their machloket. So now another way to explain it is again to undermine the other assumption we made before. We go back to that assumption that anything that's tevel for chala is just chulin. It doesn't have a special status. And everybody agrees that a sheni can't make a third level in chulin. They're arguing about whether you're allowed to cause tuma to chulin in Eretz Yisrael. Masavar mutar legrom tumah lechulin be'eretz Yisrael. One of them says it's fine. Masavar asur legrom tumah lechulin be'eretz Yisrael. The other one says it's not allowed. So over here, basically it says that all the assumptions you made before are incorrect. The machlok, it's not about sheni or shlishi. Everybody agrees. According to all the explanations here, Rabbi Elazar believes that sheni doesn't make a shlishi in chulin. That's what the Gemara says. That's Rabbi Elazar's opinion. According to two of the explanations, the latter two explanations, even the Chachamim agree that sheni ain't osef shlishi be'chulin. And that would be like what we said before, Rabbi Meir u'machlukoto. So when they say Rabbi Elazar believes this way, it means Rabbi Elazar and his machloket also believe it. We don't have a name for the other party, so we just call it Rabbi Elazar. But everybody agrees, sheni osech shlishi b'chulin. In the first explanation, we said their machloket is about the status of chulin that has tevel for chala. Is it like chala or not like chala? Now the Gemara says, rejects all of that and says, everybody agrees it's not chala. Everybody agrees that chulin doesn't make a shlishi. What's their argument about here? Whether you can, regular chulin, are you allowed to make it tamei in Eretz Yisrael? Now, why Eretz Yisrael versus outside of Eretz Yisrael? That is because outside of Eretz Yisrael, you have what's called tumat Eretz Amim. We spoke about this in Nazir. There's automatic tumah when you go into Eretz Amim, so almost everything's tamei anyway. So, saying not making something tamei doesn't really have as much relevance when you're in Chutzlaretz than when you're in Eretz Yisrael. Inside of Eretz Yisrael, the relevance is that if you want to protect the truma, or basically protect Tarot in Eretz Yisrael, what they said is, don't expand the amount of Tumah that's in Eretz Yisrael. Even though by Chulin, there's no restriction against making it Tameh, we restrict you from making it Tameh in order that we protect other Tarot. The more Tumah that's around, the more chance that there's a problem. So, the less Tumah that's around, the less chance that there is a problem. So once again here, what's the Machloket? You're sticking the piece in between the two Chalot. You have the Chala Tameah, you have the Chala Torah, and now you're going to put the Batzek in the middle. We said before that the piece in the middle will become Tameh. It just won't convey that Tumah forward to the Chala Torah. But that piece in the middle will become Tameh. What's the issue with making that middle piece Tameh? It's exactly this problem. Rabbi Elazar says making Chulin and Eretz Yisrael Tameh is not a problem. So we'll make that piece in the middle Tameh, and that'll create the physical bridge. The Chachamim say no. If you put that piece in the middle, you're making Chulin and Eretz Yisrael Tameh. You're not allowed to do that. Now, once again, you have to ask, what is the difference in Rabbi Elazar's opinion between the Mishnah and the Braita? In the Braita, he says you can even put a kibetza there. So that's fine, because even if it is a kibetza size, it won't convey the Tumah forward, because the Chalat Tmeah is a Rishon. The piece in the middle becomes a Sheni. The Chalat Torah would be a Shlishi. It doesn't matter, because it's all Chulin here. So that's how you can explain it can be a kibetza. Why does Rabbi Elazar and the Mishnah argue on this? Rashi brings two possibilities as to why he argues over here. Betano de matznita and betano de brayta libe de Rabbi Elazar nami b'ha plige. They argue about the same fact. Betano matznita and savar afagav de mutar de grom la tuma miel kol kamad efshar de miute lo mafshinan lehu de grom lehen tuma bechinam. So he says, if we can minimize it, why not minimize it? Having less than a kabeitza become tamei is valuable versus more than a kibetza. Because it's less than a kibetza, it won't convey the tumah forward, even to truma, even to kodesh. If it is a kibetza size, then it can affect truma and kodesh. So that's why we say minimize it. That might be the machloket, similar to what Rashi said before. The difference between Rabbi Elazar and the Mishnah and the Braita is, v'ha'efshar ba'ochi. Hilkach, not allowed to do the size of kibetza, because that's chashuv. So we don't want you to make something chashuv into tamei, so therefore we say don't do it. Inami, he offers another alternative explanation. The Tana de Madnitin Savar Dilma Nagah Chala Be'emtzait Achar Kriyat Hashem. This is a worry in general, which is the possibility that once you take off the chala, that chala now is truma. Truma can become a shlishi, the tuma. So the fear is that if you make the middle piece tamei, and it's a sheni l'tumah, that middle piece, the problem is when you take off the challah to make it into challah, if it comes into contact with that, that challah will become tamei, or become tameya. When would that be true? When the middle piece is the size of kabetza. The middle piece is less than the size of kabetza, it won't make it. So in order to prevent that fear, or to protect against that possibility, we say don't make the middle piece a kabetza, so that when you take off the challah, it's not at risk. So Rashi offers that as an alternative explanation as to why the Tana of our Mishnah says less than a kabetza, even though, in theory, Rabbi Elazar's opinion, as the Braita says, should apply even to a kabetza size. Because all the ways that we explained it here, it could be as the size of kabetza and it would work. The only reason to do less than a kabetza, according to Rashi, is either because minimize the tuma, or because of this idea that we want to protect against this possible fear of the challah touching that piece. And having less than a kabetza makes that, gives that protection. So that's why Rashi explains the Gemara over here, that the Gemara is explaining the machloka between the Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar. And the difference between Rabbi Elazar and the Mishnah and the Braita is simply explained by what we just said over here, whether you should minimize or not minimize tuma. On the other hand, again, the Mifrashim of the Mishnah and Challah suggests possibly that what the Gemara here is explaining, the difference between Rabbi Elazar and the Mishnah and Rabbi Elazar and the Braita. Why does Rabbi Elazar and the Mishnah say less than a kabetza? And Rabbi Elazar in the Braita says more than a kabetza, for exactly this reason, all the reasons that we gave here. This machloket revolves around whether it's mutar to cause tuma, not mutar to cause tuma. Is it challah? Is it not considered to be challah? All these items apply. If it's less than a kabetza, it doesn't convey tuma. If it's more than a kabetza, it does convey tuma, and that would be the machloket between them. Right? So that's an alternate way to explain the Gemara over here. Alright, Bobarom Darash Rabbi Akiva. Now we're moving on to the next item in the Mishnah, which Rabbi Akiva was Doresh that day, that Alpai Mama by the Arei Alevim comes to teach you about Chum Shabbat. And here the Gemara says, Mamai Kamiflegei. What does Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yossi Aglili argue about here? Mar Sever Tchumim De'oraita. Rabbi Akiva clearly believes that Tchumim are Mina Torah. And therefore he says that the Alpai Mama mentioned by the Arei Alevim is talking about Chum Shabbat. Mar Sever De'rabanan. And the alternate opinion, Rabbi Elazar ben Osher, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, thinks that it's mi derabanan. So since he thinks it's mi derabanan, you can't explain the Alpai Mama by the Arei Alevim as being a reference to Tchum Shabbat, because he doesn't think that that's a din d'oraita. He thinks it's a din derabanan. Tosfot over here raises the issue that the Gemara in Irvin has a different source for the 2,000 Amot on Shabbat, that it's D'oraita. The source isn't from the Arei Alevim, but Al Yitze Ishmim Komo B'Yom HaShabbat, and from there they learn out Tchumim D'oraita. So that actually throws a monkey wrench into the works over here, because that would mean that even if you believe that Tchumim are D'oraita, you could still say that that's not the explanation of the Pasuk by the Arei Alevim, because I have a different source for Tchumim D'oraita. So here the Gemara makes it definitive that Tchumim is either D'oraita or D'rabanan. If you hold it D'rabanan, then you don't learn the Pasuk by the Arei Alevim. Based on what Tosfot says here, it's not so clear, because you could use that other source to make it D'oraita, and nevertheless, you could still say that the Arei Alevim, that Pasuk is not referencing Tchumim D'Shabbat, but rather Arei Alevim. So he says it's not Mukhrach that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi Aglili believes that it is D'rabanan. He leaves that as somewhat of a Tzarech Iyun. It turns out that Yushalmi believes that everybody believes Tchumim Midoraita. They only argue about how big that Tchum is Midoraita. Is the Tchum 2,000 Amot, or is the Tchum the size of Machane Yisrael, which is 12 mil? It's a question about the size of that, whether it's Doraita, and whether the 2,000 Amot only the Rabbanan. Using that as a paradigm, I think you could explain what the Gemara is saying over here. Even if you learn it from the other source, it would still say that over here, that 2,000 amot is not D'oraita. The other source doesn't necessarily tell you 2,000 amot. The other source only tells you that there are tchumim D'oraita. So now, once you know that there are tchumim D'oraita, the size of those is not clear. So what you could say is that the Gemara believes over here, to get to 2,000 amot being D'oraita, you would have to learn it out of the Arei Alevim. The fact that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi Aglili does not think that that's correct, he must believe that Tchumim, at least at 2,000 Amot, are Dirabanan. He might hold that they're totally Dirabanan. But at least the 2,000 Amot are Dirabanan. Even if he has the other source Pasuk that is brought in Erim, I'd say Yishmim Komo B'Yom HaShabbat, that source does not prove to you that it's 2,000 amot. That might just say that there's tchumin doraita up at 12 mil. It might be a much bigger area than doraita, and the rabbanan moved it down to 2,000 amot. So that's maybe how to explain here this position of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yosi Haglili, that even though he might hold a tchumin doraita, he clearly holds that 2,000 amot are the rabbanan, because otherwise he would need a source for the 2,000 amot. The fact that he doesn't have this pasuk from the Arei Leviim, which he uses for another limud, shows you that he holds that it's the rabbanan, at least with regards to the 2,000 amot. Even though, as Tosfot says over there, the Gzeir Shova actually comes from Shabbat to the Arei Leviim, and it would be 2,000 amot. In the Gemara in Klal Gadol in Shabbat, seems to indicate that there could be opinions that are doraita, but that are not 2,000 amot, like the Yushami that I mentioned before, and that would be a way to explain this Gemara. All right, Tarabanan. Bobiyom Darash Rabbi Akiva B'Shashalu Yisrael Menei Yam Natnu Ehem Nomar Shira. The Kate said Amru Shira. How did they say Shira? This comes out of the word Leimor. So the extraneous word Leimor over there teaches you that they said the Shira in a certain manner. Rabbi Akiva says, Ki Gadol Amikaret Halel. Like a person of age that is leading the Halel. Ve'en Oni Macharav Roshei Prakim. That they answer after him, the beginning of the Prakim, the beginning of the paragraphs. Which is, again, in Halel, it's Haluluka, Halulu Avdei Hashem. So when he says Haluluka, they answer Haluluka, Halulu Avdei Hashem, they answer Haluluka, they keep answering Haluluka. Moshe Amar, Ashir La Hashem, Ve'en Omrim, Ashir La Hashem. So he opens with the refrain, Ashir La Hashem, and they repeat, Ashir La Hashem. Moshe Amar, Kigo Ga'a. So then Moshe goes on to the next piece, it says Kigo Ga'a, Ve'en Omrim, Ashir La Hashem, similar to the Haluluka in Halel. As we discussed in the Mishnah, it's a machloket in the Rishonim, as to what happens when you reach the second paragraph. In Halel, it's clear there's another paragraph, because it's a new parak Tehillim, B'tzeit Yisrael Mimitzrayim. So then when he starts B'tzeit Yisrael, do you say B'tzeit Yisrael? And then you say Haluluka? Or do you say B'tzeit Yisrael Mimitzrayim, or B'tzeit Yisrael? What becomes the Rosh Parakim? Is the Rosh Parak remain Haluluka all the way through? Or is the Rosh Parak, as you start each new parak of Tehillim, that becomes the refrain for that parak? It's a machloket Rishonim about that. In Azashir, maybe there is no machloket, according to some, because there are no prakim inside of Azashir. Therefore, they answer to Shir Lashem every time. That's one possibility. I mentioned to you before on the Mishnah, the Marsha says that there are prakim within Azashir. And I noted over there that if you look carefully, it is broken up in a manner in which you could see that there are separate stanzas within Azashir. They're not of equal length, but every time that you reach a pasuk that has a duplication in it, that's the ends of the stanza. So, Adjavor Hashem, Adjavor Amzukanita. So that's a duplication. Hashem Ish Mechama, Hashem Shemo. Michamocha Be'elim Hashem, Michamocha Neder Bakodesh. So those would be the end of each stanza, and then you would have the question, is it Ashir Hashem is just for the first paragraph, or all the way through? When you reach the next paragraph, does then the refrain become the new beginning of the new stanza's refrain, and so you have the same question you have by Halel. That same machlok would apply by Azashir. Rabbi Elazar ben Osher Rabbi Yosi Haglili Omer Kikatana Mekareat Halel. It's like a katan who's leading Halel. A katan who leads Halel, you can't be yotze with what he says. In the case of the gadol, you have shomea keoneh. So when he says it and you answer the refrain, you're yotze with what he says. When you have a katanan cannot be motzi a gadol. He's a minor. He doesn't have the ability to be motzi. So therefore, you have to repeat after him every word he says. So Rabbi Yosef Leah says, Leimor, Moshe says, Ashir Lashem, they say Ashir Lashem. Ki go ga, they say ki go ga. And so on and so forth. They keep repeating after him exactly what he says. Moshe Amar Ashir Lashem, Yomrim Ashir Lashem, Moshe Amar ki go ga, Yomrim ki go ga. So exactly as Moshe says it, they repeated it, ki katana koreat alel. Rabbi Nechemi Omer, ki sofer apareis alashma. So this is the in the Mishnah, when Rabbi Akiva says it, we have the response, Rabbi Nechemia Omer Kukurina Tashema, Lo Kukurina Talel. Rabbi Nechemia says they did it like reading the Shema, and not like reading the Alel. Over there, it's not clarified what Rabbi Nechemia's opinion is. If you match up Rabbi Nechemia with Rabbi Nechemia, then you would suggest over here that what Rabbi Nechemia meant in the Mishnah is this. Kesofer Apareis Al Shema BeBeit Knesset. It's like a sofer that leads the Shema in the Beit Knesset. This is someone who's in the Beit Knesset all the time. And when 10 people gather, he leads the services over there. He opens up and they continue after him. He starts, so that gives everybody the signal to start. But once he starts, they read it simultaneously. They read it together after that point. So he'll start in the beginning of the Shema, Birkat Shema, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Yetzer Or, Borei Choshech, Osei Shalom, V'Re'et HaKol. And then they'll repeat after him, and then they'll run through it simultaneously. They'll be reading it together, and that's what happened here as well. So now, B'maika Miflegate, what are they arguing about? Rakiva Sabar Leimor Amilta Kamaito. The word Leimor is modifying Ashir Lashem. What was Leimor? What was said over by them again and again? Leimor, they should say Ashir Lashem. Rabbi Elezer ben Osher, Rabbi Yosef Elias Sabar Leimor Akol Milta Amilta. Leimor means whatever Moshe said, they repeated after him. They said after him. Rabbi Nechemia Sabar Yomru Damur Kulu Bahadei Adadi. It says there Yomru. They all said it. So that means that they all said it simultaneously. Leimor. So then what was the Leimor? The Patach Moshe Bereisha. Moshe opened up as Yashir Moshe ben Israel at Ashir Azot. Now whether that's the beginning of the song or the beginning of the song is said Ashir Lashem, and then they all joined in unison. Your question, how do they know? The answer is that they also had the same Ruach HaKodesh that gave the Shira. That implies that ben Israel were not just following Moshe, but rather they were also imbued with that Ruach HaKodesh, and so they together came up with the song. They were all singing together simultaneously. So that's the three possibilities. Tosfot, he says in the Tosafta, Mechem Yomer, K'bnei Adam Shkorim et Hashema, Shenemar Vayum Leimor, Ma'amed, She'a Moshe Putech Tchila, V'Yisrael Onim Acharav V'Gomrim, that Yisrael followed after him and ended. Moshe Amar Aziz Shir Moshe, V'Yisrael Omrim, Ashir La'Hashem. Moshe Amar Aziz Zimratka, V'Yisrael Omrim, Zeke Li'Ivan Ve'yu, responsively. Moshe would say at the beginning, they would say the end of each pasuk. It's funny that the Tosefta thinks they started at Az Yashir Moshe Ben Israel. Az Yashir Moshe Ben Israel is really the narrative telling you that the song started. But they include that in the beginning part, but they said it responsively. So that's another way to explain Rabbi Nechemia, which is Moshe opens the beginning of the pasuk, and Ben Israel closed the latter half of the pasuk. Moshe says, Hashem Yishmachama, Ben Israel answer, Hashem Shemo. So that's responsively, that's another explanation of what Korim Kishma means according to Rabbi Nechemia. So truthfully, you could, in the Mishnah, you can explain Rabbi Nechemia one of three ways. You have two positions of Rabbi Nechemia, that one in our Gemara, which is that Moshe started and then they said it simultaneously. You have the Tosefta that says Rabbi Nechemia says they did it responsibly. And there are others who still explain that when Rabbi Nechemia says Koreat Hashema, it's Katan Koreat Hashema. Like when a Katan reads the Shema, they have to say everything after him and you would have to repeat it exactly. So the ambiguity in the Mishnah allows you to fit any of the other opinions into it. So those are the different possibilities. There could be, truthfully, a machloket here about whether Shomea Ka'oneh works. We know that Shomea Ka'oneh works, but makom mitzvah. Like when you're saying Kiddush, Abdullah, mitzvah that you do, Shomea Ka'oneh works. The question might be, by a shira like this, where there's no mitzvah, does Shomea Ka'oneh work? And that might be part of the machloket over here, is whether they had to repeat it after Moshe, or they could either respond to him, or responsively, or just say the Rosh Prakim, might have to do with their Shomea Kona can be invoked in this type of situation. Tan Rabbanan. Darash Rabbi Yosef Lili, B'shash Alu Yisrael Min HaYam, Natnu Ehem Lomar Shira. When Bnei Yisrael exited the Yam, they lifted up their eyes to say Shira. V'ketzet Amru Shila. How do they sing Shira? Olel Mutal Al Birkei Imo. A young baby that was on his mother's lap. Or a suckling, a baby that was nursing from his mother. As soon as they got view of the Shekhinah, then the little baby on his mother's lap picked up his head. Or the baby that was nursing released his mother. And they say, the drasha comes out of Zeh Keli Vanveyu. The Chazal, whenever they use the word zeh, they think means that you can physically see it, point to it. And that's why the Chazal darshan in numerous places, like by the menorah, zeh maseh menorah, they say zeh means that Moshe was shown a picture of the menorah, that he physically saw the menorah because he's nitka sheba. By the Kiddush HaChodesh, it's zeh, Chodesh HaZeh, they say also over there that Hashem showed them the molad alavana, the red of the moon. So anytime you use the word zeh, Chazal darshan had to mean that they were able to see it physically. So Zekeli Vanveyu, that's why they say that they all said Zekeli Vanveyu, means that they all saw it and they were able to point to the Shekhinah. So even the little babies were able to see the Shekhinah. Shneamar, Mipi Ololim V'Yonkim Yasadta Oz. That from the mouth of the Ololim and Yonkim, right, you established your strength. So here Hashem demonstrated his strength with splitting the Yam. And you heard that from the Ololim and the Yonkim. As Rashi points out over here, in terms of Olel and Yonek, Olel gadol mi yonek. Olel is slightly bigger than a yonek. Ketiv by Shmuel, when he wipes out Amalek, it says, Me'alel v'ad yonik. V'derech ha-mikra lomar kein. It's a literary style of the psukim. Klomar, kala ha-kol. It's including everything. Min ha-chashuv ad ha-garua. Mishor ad-seh. So, Mishor ad-seh means from this end to that end, means it incorporates everything. Me'alel v'ad yonik means everybody. It's a way to express everybody by taking the olel on one end, the yonik on the other end, and saying, everything's included. Right. Me'odu ad kush. The Gemara Megillah argues about whether those were at either end of the world or close by. But the same idea. That we say from one end to the other end. So olel v'yonek is an all-incorporating statement. Haya Rabbi Meir Omer, minayin shafilu ubarim shebe iman amru shira. How do you know that even the fetuses in the womb of their mother said shira? Shneemar, because the pasuk says, b'makhelot baruch elokim Hashem im mikor Yisrael. In great multitudes, they gave blessing to God, who's Hashem, Mekor Yisrael, from the, now, Mekor means from the essence, or from the core of Klal Yisrael. Over here, they're playing on the word Mekor, which is also used to mean the womb. So, Mekor Yisrael means from the wombs of Israel, there was Baruch Elokim. They sang bracha, blessings, or shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And who are those? Who are the ones that are in the womb? Those are the ubarim. Those are the fetuses. As Tosafot points out over here, Ein lomar Rabbi Yossi Gli, Rabbi Meir Plige. Rabbi Yossi Gli and Rabbi Meir are not arguing about who sang Shira. They agree. They're just bringing you a different position. So it's not that Rabbi Yossi thinks that Olim Yonkim, yes. Ubarim, no. Or Rabbi Meir thinks Ubarim, yes, not Olim Yonkim. They just bring you a different psukim to show you the extent of it. So Rabbi Yossi Gli focuses on Olel Vionek and Rabbi Meir focuses on the Ubarin. Now, I think that the expression of the Gemara is, or the Drashot here, are coming to show you that the presence of the Shekhinah, or seeing the Shekhinah at that point, was so obvious that even Olim V'Yonkim could see it. Even the youngest could sense it, or feel the presence of Hashem. And then Rabbi Meir says, not even the Olim V'Yonkim, but even the Ubarin, even those fetuses knew it. The fetus might have the advantage. We know that the fetus learns Torah inside of the womb, so maybe that was its advantage. But even that, the other possibility is to say it the opposite way around, which is, sometimes, and that's what the Gemara says in other places, that since the Pascha Nevoah Mi'Israel, after Nevoah left Klal Yisrael, then Nevoah, or this Ruach HaKodesh, was left to the Shotim and the Ktanim. It's left to those people that are insane. They sometimes get these visions or these expressions of Hashem's will. And same thing, the ktanim, these children, the babies. And that's why many times I'm going to say, sokli psuka, they go to katan, tell me a pasuk that you're learning, as if that has some sort of ruach kodesh. Because of the tara and the purity of these youngsters, they're able to experience a kodesh baruch hu. And that might be the focus over here, that the olim yonkim and the ubarim are still pure, and therefore they're able to sense the presence of the shekhinah, and that's what the focus is over here, as opposed to adults who are more complex and less tahor, so they're not able to see it as clearly as the Olim v'Yonkim. The Marsha over here claims that the issue of the Olim and Yonkim has to do with the Agadata that we saw earlier in the Masechta, that when the women gave birth in the fields, Hashem used to take care of the children there, and they were brought up by, quote-unquote, the Shekhinah, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there the Gemara says that when they got to the Shirat HaYam, they were the first ones to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu because they had already been in His presence. And so this is a continuation of that Agadata that we saw earlier in the Masechta. Those brings an interesting Tosefta that suggests that Bnei Yisrael were hesitating about singing Shira for the same reason that it seems that the Malachim didn't say Shira, because of this hesitation that the Mitzrim were dying, that they shouldn't sing Shira. And so that when the babies opened up, that basically gave the signal that they should sing Shira and that it was permissible for them to sing Shira. Tosafot brings Tosafot that even says that the Malachim were hesitant. And then when they saw Bnei Yisrael singing Shira, Patchu Avheim Vamru Shira, that they continued with the Shira of the Malachim, which will go against the Gemara Megillah that says that Hashem said to the Malachim, Masei Yadai Tovim Beyam, Vatem Omrim Shira, which said that the Malachim could not say Shira. This Tosefta seems to disagree and said the Malachim did do it, but they had to wait for Bnei Yisrael to open first before they engaged in the Shira. So maybe that's another explanation as to why the babies were important here, because they set the standard by which we could sing Shira here, because there was a possibility that it would have been incorrect or improper to sing Shira. Okay, we'll stop here by the two dots in the top of Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph.